Welcome to Full Disclosure, a Delphi Digital podcast where we talk about all things crypto law. I'm Sarah Brennan, and this is the second part of our interview with Stephen Pally, a digital commerce partner at Brown Abbott. In this episode, we debate whether crypto is inherently political and the fallout from the CFTC suing Yuki Dao. If you like this episode, make sure you like and subscribe. And with that, let's jump back in. Do you think crypto is inherently political?
No, crypto is no more political than words are political. It's technology, it's neutral. I think people, it's like a mirror for what people want to believe. It's the same thing with Bitcoin. It allowed me to imagine a negotiation system that didn't require me to be an intermediary. This is nothing new about it, but you think of Bitcoin as TCP/IP and Lightning, for example, is like HTTP. Like those are, if you think of it as TCP/IP, TCP/IP, is that inherently political? It's a communication rail.
Yeah, that's an interesting stance. I'd say I'm probably on the opposite
side. What do you mean? How can you be on the opposite side? Is there an opposite side? What the heck?
Well, I think for me, right, like there is a fight that has been brewing around personal liberty, privacy, free speech versus like surveillance state. Mm-hmm. Regulate everything. Does the government have a vested interest in knowing that you purchase like extra socks? They don't, right? There has to be a limit.
But do you know what you don't need permission to use? Dollars, paper money.
Just wait.
Maybe. They're... No, you're right. And there's also like paper money is not like you don't have to check an SDN list. And like if I put a $10 bill in
my wallet, paper money for you.
But if I, and paper money smells good. And if I know people, whenever
well, no,
I say that,
people
like, it smells like cocaine and death, right? And blood.
It smells like metal. Yeah,
My leather wallet can't be frozen. Ha.
Does being a lawyer in crypto necessitate like being interested in politics even or involved even if you don't want to, or at least keeping up with it?
You know, when I started doing this crypto law stuff, it just kind of felt like a small group of people who were sort of like creating new ways of entering into contracts that kind of respected the software and coming up with ideas. And as it grew, you know, suddenly there were people from that group who like switched over to like playing the DC game, you know what I mean, with these different drafts of bills, and it's none of it's public. And, you know, certain people tweet to say either, you know, panic or don't panic. I just hate it, man. I mean, to me, this has nothing. The crypto was invented to get rid of all this stuff. And I think in the long run, all this stuff will actually be irrelevant. But it's in the long run. In the short run, it's very relevant to me in my day to day, you know, because I have clients to advise and protect. Right. And so I have to stay on top of it, even though I think it's kind of one of the biggest ways I could possibly waste my time.
I don't think that to be a lawyer, you need to be political. It is a political act getting sworn in as a lawyer in the United States, because at a fundamental level, it means that you believe in the political system. You believe in law. You believe that, you know, there's something ideological about it. It's foolish to say otherwise. But yeah, I find myself like Gabe, kind of drawn inexorably into that world. I fundamentally believe too, like people who invent really cool shit don't ask for permission. There's like a balance between like being involved and engaged, and to Gabe's point, like doing the cool shit. And lawyers can do that. This is fun. I don't know if I've said this to you before, but like lawyers invented robots. Well, corporation, an artificial person, right? Lawyers invented that. The first robots were invented by lawyers. Like we can make cool shit too.
Let's switch to Yuki Dao. Let's talk about like what is going on in that case.
But basically, the Commodities Futures Trading Commission, and for those folks who are outside of the United States or who maybe don't pay attention to law, they are a regulator, financial regulator in the United States responsible for derivatives, futures products. And they filed a broad enforcement action against a company called B0X LLC, and they charged them with violating the Commodities Exchange Act by operating basically a derivatives platform and not registering as a what's called a designated contract market, brought an enforcement action against them and settled with them. Now, the interesting part is that after they settled, on the same day that they settled, they filed a lawsuit in federal court in California against a DAO. And they said, and this is from the CFTC's complaint, they said, it's really exciting. We're going to be really preparing for the new regulatory environment by ensuring BZX is future-proof. So many people across the industry right now are getting legal notices, yada, yada, yada. So we're going to basically decentralize it and there isn't going to be any legal risk. And so what the CFTC said was, yeah, that's not right. The DAO that you created is really like a partnership, a general partnership, and the people who voted tokens in it are all liable, or the DAO is liable, and then under partnership law, the token holders are liable. They then said to the court, instead of like providing a process, instead of serving people, like if I sue, like Sarah, if I sued you, which I promise I would never do, but if I sued you, I would have to like prepare a lawsuit, a complaint in federal court. In some state courts, it's called a petition, to file a lawsuit, and then I have to get a summons. Two documents. One's the lawsuit, one's the summons. I would then have to serve the summons and the complaint to you, personally, generally, like a process server. In some states, you can serve by registered mail, whatever. But you have to, like, constitutionally, you're required to get actual notice of it. So the CFTC said, Judge, this is really hard. We can't do that. We want to have permission to serve people by posting it in a chat box on a website. And the judge initially said yes. And Lexpunk actually was the first party to file something called an amicus brief, or friend of the court brief. And in the United States, you can basically ask permission. You file a motion with the court. It usually happens on appeal, where you say, we would, because we have an interest in the outcome here, we would like to give you our position to help the court reach a correct solution. It's actually not, it's not something that never happens, but it's not incredibly typical for amicus briefs to be filed in trial court proceedings. And now you've got them filed by, you know, a couple of significant entities with good law firms involved. The judge is at least open to hearing from other sides. I'll also say, like, conceptually, this doesn't go to the service issue, this is more the merits here. Conceptually, the error that the CFTC might have made, along with the founders, is the notion that these guys, their sort of performative decentralization, actually moved the risk associated with their enterprise to a bunch of anonymous people. I'm not sure that we can accept that as true. Like that gesture of, hey, we're no longer involved here, it's you token holders. And then yeah, have the CFTC settle with these people and be like, yeah, we're going after the token holders.
It goes even deeper than that. I mean, it's quite debatable whether the DAO is an enterprise, because in my opinion, the reason why there are protocol DAOs, which are DAOs that govern a deployed smart contract system, is because some of these systems are completely immutable, but most of them have and must have some variability, a few parameters that can be set, right? Interest rates or what have you. Because the original developers are not in control of that system by design, someone has to control that mutability, that limited mutability. And so what do you do? Well, you say, look, give the power to the users, right? And so that's why you have liquidity mining, where the governance token is distributed to the people using the system, right? You're essentially putting the power to govern something that people are relying on the people who rely on it. Now, you cannot from that necessarily assume that they are all in a common enterprise. Different people may have different reasons for using that software. So it's just a preposterous inference all around that this is some kind of business enterprise where everyone is united in running the system for others for profit. They are the users themselves.
I think that the CFTC's acceptance of the founder's statement that they were like moving control of this to other people is fundamentally wrong. And I think that's where the case will end up failing. And, you know, the CFTC, like, they charged people. They settled. Move on.
As background here, right, the tactics amongst regulators is to pick on the small guy and hope they don't show up. And I do think that people intervening is a product of that tactic, because it's the community coming to the defense of the defenseless kind of concept. But the crypto community, like, lawyer community, there's some controversy over like whether to do it or not. Can you talk about like the pluses and minuses?
Well, so like one downside that I've heard articulated, fine, let the CFTC take a default judgment. It won't really have much impact. It won't be precedential. Like if it's fully litigated and somebody ends up getting served, maybe you'll get an order that you don't like, which is these things are actually subject to registration requirements under the Commodities Exchange Act. And so I guess like maybe the concern is there'll be a bad case. My position is like, Look, if you have an argument and you think you have a good argument, wouldn't you rather make the argument than just like have nothing to do with it? Why would you not want to engage? Because you think an order that is entered by default is not going to be precedential? I don't think that's right. If a judge gets a similar issue somewhere else, they will find an opinion, even if it says that it's not precedential, they'll find it and they'll cite it. It's the way this shit works. So I think you have to try and have a voice. It's a bad idea to spike the ball. I don't know how this is going to turn out. I think that between the three briefs that have been filed with some really pretty deep technical information in our briefing, the judge is going to have a lot to think about. And I would suggest respectfully, it's better to fully brief something like this than it is to just let shit happen.
Do you think like this whole amicus route is sort of a thing for crypto in the future?
If you have more cases like this where nobody shows up, it would not be a surprise to see industry organizations show up to present a different view than the government. So sure, in this context, but again, that's the situation where like nobody shows up, which is not really, frankly, it's not typical. I've never seen the government try and serve a DAO on a website before. It's not a thing I've seen. Like alternative service, I've definitely seen before. I've used it in cases. You got to give the CFTC credit for creativity.
Gabe, do you have any closing thoughts? Pally, closing thoughts?
Yeah. Well, yeah. My closing thought is if you're in crypto, DeFi, Web3, and you have legal issues, I think Pally would be a very good person to call up and talk to.
Oh, thank you, Gabe.
That's nice.
It really means a lot. I appreciate it.
All right. Well, we have a feel-good ending moment. Unexpected, but delightful. I think we can call it here.
Really enjoyed chatting with you guys. It was a lot of fun.
Thanks for watching the second part of our interview with Stephen Pally. If you enjoyed this episode and you want to see more from Delphi Media, make sure you like and subscribe. See ya!